All right, hi everybody, and welcome to the test for preparation class for the elementary class of the American History Program of History at Our House. So we are going to begin looking at the test preparation sheets together as a group and review your answers, and you'll get my feedback on those answers. So I'm going to share my screen, and we're going to dive right into this exercise. So we're going to go back and forth. And you'll notice, of course, that some things are the same and some things are harder for the upper L, or rather the reverse. Some things are easier for the lower L. So anyway, we have the same anchor fact descriptions, at least, so we can as a group do these together. So let's go ahead and leap in and say what these are, just to get it's like a warm up, right? Just remembering a few basic anchor facts. Number one, then, 1215, our latest anchor fact. Sigourney, go ahead.
In 1215, King John signed the Magna Carta, the roots of liberty in England to America. The king is no longer above the law.
Okay, good. That was a very long answer. That's a wonderful answer. And what we need here is a kind of shorter version, right, Sigourney? Because you couldn't possibly have fit that on one line. So we need something like, the Magna Carta says the king is not above the law. Okay, something like that. I'm just going to give, all I'm doing there, Sigourney, because you got, it's a perfect answer, and I would never dream of taking away points, okay? But all I'm saying is, one of the exercises involved in writing a test is making sure that your answer is short and sweet, if you can do it. Okay, so the Magna Carta says the king is not above the law. And you might have said also that the king, that there's no taxation without representation. That's also okay. But remember that, well, when we get to the upper L question number six, we're going to have a little bit more of an important kind of thought about that, where the king is not above the law is the main message of the Magna Carta. So that's the one that I would want you to try to keep on remembering. The king is not above the law. Okay, let's do number two. 508, 509. Short and sweet, Jeremy?
The Athenians created a democracy and the Romans created a republic.
That is short and sweet. Perfection. Okay, if you added additional details on those two lines, that's fine, but you needed four things. Athenians, the word Athenians, you needed the word democracy, you needed the word Romans, and you needed the word republic. Well, if you had those, then you got it right. Okay, number three, circa 3000 BC. Talk about an anchor fact going right to the bottom, huh? Rosetta, go ahead.
Eleanor unifies ancient Egypt.
Okay. Magna Carta unifies ancient Egypt, the first monarchy in history. Or you could have said, Magna Carta creates the first monarchy in history. Or something like that. Yeah, there's different ways of putting it. Unifies Egypt, of course, is what we've had for a long time there. Good. Okay. Number four. 476 AD. What happened there, Nemo?
At 476 AD, the Roman Empire fell to barbarians, ending the Roman Empire and beginning European history.
Okay, right. 476 AD, Roman Empire falls, European history begins. Okay, right. Okay, number five, Patrick, can you do that for us, please?
1607 AD, the first colony is established in Jamestown, Virginia. 1620 AD, Plymouth Colony is established in Massachusetts.
Okay, pronunciation correction, Plymouth. I know that Y's can be long Y's or short Y's, right? So Plymouth Colony is established in Massachusetts. Very good. Okay, good. So Plymouth and Jamestown. Okay, now the upper L have a couple of additional questions here to work on. So I'm going to turn it over to the upper L for a little bit here. And number six is part of what we were looking at with number one as well. So Anna, what can you tell us there?
The kind of government that was created by the Magna Carta was a constitutional monarchy.
Okay, and take it back to what I said in number one. What's the basic idea of a constitutional monarchy?
That the king is not above the law.
Okay, very good. So, I can't remember who it was before. I think it was Sigourney, maybe, who said something very interesting. That the Magna Carta was the beginning of English liberty. Which is a nice thought, right? However, liberty. Wonderful, wonderful word. One of the greatest words ever invented. However, what does it mean? So, we need to have this idea of constitutional monarchy to help us better understand it. What we have is the freedom from tyranny. Because if the king can do whatever he wants, then you're not free. But if the law stops him, well, now you're becoming free. And once you get rid of kings altogether, then you're likelier to be free. Except you might still run into problems. So, we'll work on that in this part of American history that we're going to be seeing. So, getting rid of kings is a good thing, but not necessarily everything. Okay, number 7. So again, building on our previous anchor facts. What 3 examples of people who had achieved greater freedom were most important to the founding fathers? Okay, 3 examples. Sigourney, please.
The 3 examples of people who had achieved greater freedom were the Greeks with their democracy, the Romans with their republic, and the English with their Magna Carta.
Okay, so that was a good answer, Sigourney, and I would again give you full marks, except your examples are not quite equal. So you would, to make them exactly equal, you would say the English with their constitutional monarchy. Because notice what you said, democracy, republic, those are kinds of government. Magna Carta was a moment or a document that created a certain kind of government. So we would say the English with their constitutional monarchy. Okay, those were the 3 indeed. Jeremy, put your hand down unless you have a really important alternate example. So, number 8, finally, complete the sentence in 2 ways. There would be no United States of America without the founding fathers, dot, dot, dot. And I suppose you could probably rewrite it in a few different ways as well, but, all right, Abby, get us started on this.
Well, A is fighting the Revolutionary War, and B is declaring independence.
Okay, a little bit out of order. I would kind of put declaring independence first. Although, yes, the shot heard around the world was a little bit before the Declaration. So we got the Declaration of Independence, B, fighting a Revolutionary War. All right, I need some help here adding a couple more to this. What are other answers to this question? There would be no United States of America without the Founding Fathers, dot, dot, dot. Okay, Wyatt, what's another answer?
I have a different way of doing one of them, signing the Declaration of Independence.
That's fine. Okay, signing, issuing, agreeing to, declaring, all of those put together, that's fine. But once they did that, Wyatt, I'm going to ask you again. Once they did that and once they fought the Revolutionary War, what else did they need to do so there could really be a United States?
Well, they had to go through the critical period. They had to fight out the critical period and even it out. I have answers for that on the on my 3rd page.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's excellent. But so you're exactly right that it was the critical period. What was the critical outcome of that period? What did they do?
The 13 colonies coming together and...
Under what law? What did they all agree to, having the same law? What's that called?
The Constitution.
There you go. Okay, great. So there would be no United States without the Founding Fathers agreeing to the Constitution. That's the 3rd one. And then there's a 4th one. Okay, anybody know? Only put your hand up if you know the 4th one of the crucial accomplishments of the Founding Fathers. Wow. 4 different ones for sure. Abby, go ahead.
Maybe creating the Navy?
Well, that's John Adams in particular, but that goes under the heading of making sure America stayed independent as presidents. Or, Anna, do you have another way of saying that or writing that out?
Establishing a government.
Well, okay, that would be the critical period, and then maintaining that independent government would be the founding era. Okay, so four things. Okay, four amazing things. All right, let's go back to Lower L, who will get us started now on the series of questions on the American Revolution. Number six, what were writs of assistance? What founding father argued against them? Okay, so, yeah, Patrick, go ahead.
The writs of assistance made it mandatory for the colonists to allow British soldiers to search their homes for smuggled goods. The founding father who argued against them was James Otis.
Okay, good. So, what? So now you answered that in an interesting way, a little bit different than I expected, because I said, what were they? You said what they did. Do you notice the difference? Okay, your answer is the writs of assistance made it mandatory. That's what they did. But you didn't really say what they were. Okay? So now I'm not going to be really, really tricky about picky, I'm going to say, about saying, oh, that's not a good answer. It is a good answer. Okay? But here's how you could make it perfect. You could say the writs of assistance were written pieces of paper, right? That made it mandatory. Well, okay. No. Just think about that. That's all.
Wait. That's what I wanted to write.
Oh, okay. Yes, I can understand. Okay. So, everybody get the distinction, right? So, just watch for that. Just try to keep it specific. Okay. Now, I think the upper elementary had a little bit more to answer here. They had to give us a little bit more. So, especially the part about why James Otis argued against them. So, Nemo, give us that one.
Stamp Act one?
No, number nine.
The writs of assistance are special slips that said that government officers could search anyone's property at any time to look for smuggled goods. James Otis argued against them because the writs of assistance were against the rights of Englishmen as established by the Magna Carta.
Ooh, okay, yeah, right. I would say the rights of Englishmen really began to be established by the Magna Carta, but they were not all... You're right, there were parts of the Magna Carta that still were law at that time, which is amazing. 550 years later, there were still some parts of the Magna Carta that were part of English law. And we're still relevant. That's true. Okay, that's a good answer. Excellent. Okay, let's go to number 10. What was the Stamp Act of 1765? Why did Patrick Henry and others see it as a sign of tyranny? Anna.
The Stamp Act of 1765 was a new tax. With this tax, stamps were required to be placed on legal documents. Patrick Henry and others saw it as a sign of tyranny because, according to the Magna Carta, only a parliament represented by the people could tax them.
Okay, nice, right? No taxation without representation. So only the colonial assemblies were allowed to tax them in that way, according to Patrick Henry and friends. Okay, we have number seven for the Lower L's a little bit different. So, what was the Stamp Act of 1765? What did the Virginia Resolves say about it? So, we have Patrick Henry and we have the Virginia Resolves. Do we have any Lower L students who are able to answer that question? We have fewer Lower L than upper, so maybe not. Okay, maybe somebody in the upper L can help the lower L students listening to give that answer just by remembering or thinking about it. Or I'll do it if necessary. What would it be? Okay, so, yeah, this is a case where... Oh, Wyatt, you want to try that out? Go ahead.
I just remembered that the Virginia results said that the colonies were being taxed unfairly.
Okay, that's true. And it said that the only people that could raise taxes like that were the only parliaments that could raise taxes like that were the colonies' own parliaments. Right? Such as, bonus question for everybody here. What was the name of the Virginia Parliament? Rosetta, go ahead.
House of Burgesses?
The House of Burgesses. Very good. Nobody ever asked me, what's a Burgess, Mr. Powell? Does anybody know what a Burgess is? How come you guys didn't ask me? Why was it, Mr. Powell, why was it called the House of Burgesses? What a strange name. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. A Burgess in English is what in Germany they would call a burger. Ha! And Dana knew that. Dana, how come you knew that?
Well, it just kind of rhymes. At first I was like, burger or something? Kind
yeah,
of
but
that.
Wait a minute. You don't know, do you know what a burger is?
Oh, yeah, because I studied it. History before.
Well, okay, but it doesn't sound like you know exactly what it is. I mean, nowadays when we hear the word burger, we're thinking fast food. But a burger was a citizen of a burg. A person who lived in a city, which was actually pretty special in the Dark Ages. Most people lived on farms. Most people were serfs. If you lived in a city, that was different. In Germany, you would be known as a burger. In England, you would be known as a Burgess. And so there's this idea of living in a city. And Jack is joking about the idea that in Germany, there's a place called Hamburg. And yes, the hamburgers were people of Hamburg. Which is sometimes funny. History's funny that way, isn't it? Yeah, so a Burgess was a citizen. You know, the idea of somebody that lives in a colony or in a settlement. All right, so now before the jokes get out of hand, let's keep going. All right, so let's go to lower L, number 8. What two important events that occurred in Boston what are two important events that occurred in Boston before the Revolutionary War? Two important events. Rosetta, go ahead.
The two important things were the Boston Tea Party and the Boston Massacre.
Okay. Good. I would put those in the reverse order just so that we have them in the order in which they occurred. But yes, I didn't ask you to put them in order, so that's fine. Okay. Well, number 11 here for upper elementary. What caused the Boston Tea Party of 1773? And then what were the consequences? In other words, how did the British government respond? Okay, Wyatt, go ahead.
The cause of the Boston Tea Party was the repeal of several taxes and the lowering of the tea tax. The colonists thought this was a trick to make them accept the Declaratory Act.
Okay, that's actually a really good answer for the first part of the question. Did you do the second part?
Yeah.
Okay.
The answer, the British closed the port of Boston and put it under the control of a military leader, J. General Gage.
Indeed, and also passed the Quebec Acts. Okay, Wyatt, that was an amazing answer. And if you were thinking about it that way, congratulations. The Declaratory Act was a specific example of what Britain was basically trying to do. Take complete control of the colonies. So that you made that connection is very good. I wouldn't normally expect anybody to write about the Declaratory Act in this question, though. So I'm going to give other people a chance to give their answers or their version of the answer here. So Abby, go ahead.
Well, what I said is the Boston Tea Party was caused by the British government lowering the tax on tea, which some, such as the Sons of Liberty, thought was a trick to make them accept other taxes later on. The British government punished it by the closure of the Port of Boston and the Quebec Act.
Okay, good. Okay. And so, yeah, that's fine. Anybody else? One more version before we move on? We're doing well here today, timing-wise. Jeremy, go ahead. Jeremy, go ahead. Oh, would appear we are having an issue. Jeremy, good luck with that. All right, let's move on then to lower L number 9. What was George Washington's crucial victory in 1776? What was the key result of this victory combined with the victory at Saratoga? Patrick, go ahead.
In 1776 AD, George Washington mounted a surprise attack on the British, the Battle of Trenton. Combined with their victory at Saratoga, the colonists rose France's interest, who later came to their aid at the decisive Battle of Yorktown.
Okay. Right. Okay. So they got French help. That was a crucial result. Okay, good. The Battle of Trenton. What was George Washington's victory? Yes. Excellent. Okay, good. Jeremy, what's your version? Wait a minute now. Are you doing the lower or upper? Oh, Jeremy, you got to watch out there. You're having some technical issues. Rosetta, go ahead.
Number 10.
Yeah, okay. Number 10, then. What were the three most important reasons why even after winning the Revolutionary War, the 13 colonies might still not form a true United States of America? Go ahead, Rosetta.
The reasons were they had hardly any transportation, they had separate governments, and the southern states wanted slavery to stay, but the northern wanted slavery to end.
Okay. Yes, so now the first one needs a little bit of work there, Rosetta. So in other words, the lack of transportation by itself, that would not be a reason. The reason why the lack of transportation was a problem or challenges in transportation was because this was such a large country. Therefore, people from different parts were really, really far away from each other and couldn't necessarily work together. Okay? So that one there needed a little bit of work, but the others were fine. The disagreement over slavery and the fact that they were used to having separate governments. Okay? So that's good. Now, let's see here. Yes, so that was indeed the same question for lower and upper L. So, and Patrick did that one well enough. So let's move on here. And so anyway, upper L or anybody else's answers concerning the important reasons. I think we've got, let's see, so far, Rosetta has said the distance, the size of the country, the separate governments, and the issue of slavery. Those are three reasons, but you could have picked three other ones. So I would like to see some other ones. What would be some other ones? Okay, Anna, what is another one?
Religion.
Okay, religious differences maybe would be a more precise way of putting that. Okay, that's good. What's another one, Jack?
Larger states could bully smaller states.
Larger states having greater power than smaller states. Okay, good. What's another one? Or perhaps an example of that. Abby, go ahead.
Well, I had another one. It was the third reason was that the country did not yet have a strong army and navy and could easily be broken apart and conquered by people who did not agree with them.
Okay, so I guess we could say a vulnerability to foreign conquest. Although, yeah, I mean, that was a part of their thinking. But remember, they had won the Revolutionary War, so it wasn't necessarily they were going to be conquered. But what nobody has mentioned yet was they had a lot of disagreements over land and trade. And those were the things that would probably get them into big trouble over time. So, you know, remember that Virginia, Jack was saying how the big states would bully the little states. Remember how Virginia had claims to about half of the rest of the country. So then you would, imagine if that's how it worked out. Then you get a state like Rhode Island that's barely the size of a city. And then you get a state like Virginia that's half the size of Europe. So it's not exactly going to be a fair situation. Right, so, okay, so all of that figured in, and so that's why we have this, how important the Constitution was and everything else that was a part of it. So, Upperell, what name is given to each addition made to the Constitution? What is the name of the sum of the additions made to the Constitution immediately after the American government was first formed? Why were these additions made? Okay, whoa, three-part question. So, whenever you got multi-part questions, remember to answer all parts. Jack, go ahead.
Each addition to the Constitution were called amendments.
Well, I can't quite hear you. Hold on. Get closer to that microphone.
Each addition to the Constitution were called amendments. Some of all amendments were called the Bill of Rights. These additions were made to prevent the government from attacking people with rights.
Okay, good. Short and sweet, all correct. Okay, so that's all we really need. The additions are called amendments. The sum of them was called the Bill of Rights, and they were put there to prevent the government from attacking people's rights. Okay, good. And something similar here for number 11 for the lower L. So... No, all right, so what do we, anybody have the lower L answer? Pretty much the same. An amendment is an addition. And then we have the sum of them is called the Bill of Rights. And what does the very first of these additions say? Everybody should always remember the First Amendment out of all of them. You don't have to remember all your constitutional amendments, but everybody should always remember the first one. Anna, what's the first one?
Wait a minute.
Oh, you weren't answering that.
What's the question again?
Well, it's not even your answer. I thought you were deliberately kind of butting in on the lower L question. What is the First Amendment? It is freedom of speech and freedom of religion. Okay, freedom of religion and freedom of speech. Those two crucial things. All right. And we know, boy, in Europe, did they have troubles with that? So that became a part of American society was really, really important. Okay. Wow. We're getting along, but we're also getting close to the end here. So lower L, what did George Washington and the rest of the founding fathers say Americans should do about European wars? What was James Monroe's famous statement of this idea called? All right. Who do we have in the Walker and Allison camp?
Be neutral.
Is that all you got?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's inappropriate because we have complete sentences. Be neutral takes up about how much room here, Walker? Take about that much room. So if I gave you 5 full lines to write your answer and you just write be neutral, then, you know, you haven't fulfilled the requirements of the question. Okay, so to take it seriously would be to write out a full set of sentences and also to answer all parts of the question. Rosetta, what would it be?
Founding fathers said that America should be neutral. This statement was called the Monroe Doctrine.
Okay, doctrine is the strange word involved. Kind of sounds like a doctor. Okay, so... Yeah, be neutral in European wars maybe would have been a more complete sentence. right? And then James Monroe's famous version of this idea was called the Monroe Doctrine. That would get you a good three lines or so, depending on the size of your writing. Okay, so now the UPREL question is a little bit more complicated than this. Explain three things the Founding Fathers did as presidents to make sure the United States would remain independent during the founding era. All right, this is a question with lots of possible answers. So let's see what you could come up with, Abby.
My answer was George Washington, in his goodbye speech, advised that America stay neutral and not become involved in the affairs of other countries, mainly those of Great Britain and France. John Adams created an army and navy to protect America from other countries that wished to hurt or destroy them. Last but not least, Thomas Jefferson made the Louisiana Purchase, which chased Napoleon out of America and gave the new country more land.
Okay, so, yeah, chase Napoleon out was maybe a little bit of a strong use of words, but you could say convince Napoleon to get out. Didn't quite chase him, but yeah, you know, he did threaten him, and he did warn him that he wouldn't like to get and have America as an enemy. And so, now, when you said last but not least, it was a little bit strange also, because that is the last of the three examples that you are using. But can you see why that's a little awkward, Abby?
Not really.
Well, was Thomas Jefferson the last of the presidents to do anything for independence?
No.
So what came after that, for instance?
James Monroe.
Yeah, at least, right? But also James Madison and then James Monroe. So Thomas Jefferson was certainly not last but least of the founding fathers. Last but not least. He was really in the middle of that group. So your examples were good, and I would give you full marks because they are all worthwhile examples. But there are others. So we just have to watch the wording of our answers sometimes. Nemo, go ahead.
Three things the Founding Fathers did to make sure the United States will remain independent included George Washington announced in 1793 that America will be neutral. Then John Adams decided to fight an undeclared war, and the birth of a navy was created when he ordered six powerful frigates to defend themselves against France. After this, when Napoleon was on the left side of the Mississippi River, President Thomas Jefferson sent an ambassador to warn Napoleon that if he crossed the river to conquer new lands, they would make an alliance with Britain. Napoleon decided to sell the land left of the Mississippi River, known as the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay, that's absolutely fine, Nemo, and I would also give you full marks, although you may have been tricked a little bit by Mr. Powell's informal formulations at one point, because I kind of made it sound like Napoleon was standing on the left side of the river over there, looking across from Arkansas, and everybody was worried about that, but so that was a little bit of an informal way of speaking. What I meant by saying Napoleon was on the other side of the river was that was his territory, right? And Napoleon never came to America, so technically. But yes, it was his territory by treaty, and therefore he could have gone there had he wanted to. But you got to be careful about writing it. When you're writing, see, there's the difference between speaking and writing. Speaking and teaching can sometimes be informal, and so Mr. Powell will sometimes speak in a way that's just designed to be fun and help you to get something. But when you write it down, you have to try to be more formal. And that just means writing things like France was in charge of the territory to the west of the Mississippi, rather than saying Napoleon was standing on the left of the Mississippi, because that's what Mr. Powell would say but in class. But you have to kind of get that means something a little bit different. Okay. Excellent. I think we could use one more example. So maybe one that has the Monroe Doctrine in it. I don't know. Wyatt, does yours? Doesn't matter. Tell it anyway. Wyatt, are you going to do 15? Oh, I think we've run into another one of those technical glitches. Okay. Is there anybody else that wants to do 15? I think that was one that could have more, you know, quite a few answers. So, Sigourney, go ahead.
Three things the founding fathers did as presidents to help make sure the United States would remain independent during the founding era were John Adams built a navy, George Washington was said to practice neutrality, and the Americans avoided a war with France when John Adams was president.
Okay, very good. Just be careful. I think you meant to say when George Washington practiced neutrality. Okay? To act neutrally in a scenario, but the practice of neutrality is what we're talking about there. Okay, and so bonus questions. And so if Patrick Henry Powell doesn't know the answer to number 16, he's in big trouble. So Patrick Henry Powell, go ahead.
Give me liberty or give me death.
Okay, we're going to have to practice the yelling of that line, but that's fine. Yes. All right, so number 17. Who were the promoters and opponents of the Constitution during the critical period? Nemo?
The promoters were the Federalists, and the opponents were the Anti-Federalists.
Very good. Number 18. Where was the first major battle of the Revolutionary War fought, Abby?
The first major battle? Where's the final major battle? I thought you said first. The Battle of Yorktown.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I may have misread it. Okay. 19. From whom did Jefferson purchase Louisiana? Okay. Let's have Rosetta.
Jefferson purchased Louisiana from France.
Okay. From whom? And so Napoleon would be a good answer. I would still give it to you if you wrote France. And then number 20. What are the names of the two-part parliament of the United States? All right, so let's see. Nemo, go ahead.
The Senate and the House of Representatives.
The Senate and the House of Representatives. So that's why I put Congress, remember, is the name of the two of them put together. Okay, so that might have been one that could trick you there. So Anna was also not sure about that, huh? So yeah, Congress, as when we refer to them as one or the other or both, we're talking about, you'll hear people say Congress, and then you'll know that there's two parts to it. Okay. So Wyatt, we're going to give you another chance here, but your sound doesn't seem to be working. So I'm going to see if, okay, go ahead, Wyatt.
So this is still I need to quickly get to it. George Washington made sure the Americans were neutral during the French Revolution, the wars that followed. James Madison fought the British that had been pressing Americans into the British Navy, even though he knew the cost was going to be high. James Monroe told the Holy Alliance that they could not come into America or the Americans would fight them.
Okay, that's a really good one. You chose examples that other people didn't choose, so I'm very glad you were able to tell us that answer. Okay, well, we are well over time, but it was time well spent. So, congratulations on your efforts. I'm impressed how well you were able to do within only 2 days. So I will always do my best to give you three, but I'm so heartened to see how well you did with only 2 days of prep. So congratulations, have a good weekend, and hopefully good luck on the test, and then when we come back next week, we continue the story of America. Wonderful. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.